Welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide current educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children, and by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome to Homeschool Companion. I'm here with my favorite producer, Mr. Gamblin, and today the title of our show is Developing Your Own Curriculum.
Well, thank you so very much. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about how to develop everything. And Dr. Gamblin, what gives you the credibility to tell others how to create their own curriculum?
Well, when you put it that way, it sounds very pompous in a way, but I'll just briefly give you a little history. I started teaching at the young age of 22, and then I did whatever they told me to do and learned, you know, if I followed the books, I pretty much did the right curriculum. And as I had to get certified for this and that, I continued taking coursework and eventually ended up with the terminal degree of a PhD, and the emphasis is in special education, both ways, for gifted and talented and for those that need accommodation. And from that experience, I was hired at the Review and Herald to develop and write curriculum. And so I spent time working on all different types of curriculum, curriculum for homeschoolers and curriculum for early childhood and curriculum by subject, you know, for Bible, for math. And the interesting thing I discovered is there was a specific process. No matter which committee I worked with or which conference I worked with or what entity, we always looked at everything that had been done and we took out of that what we wanted to do. And since that time, I now teach in an elementary school, and I also teach part-time at a university. And I'm really interested in making sure that homeschooling families know what they can and can't do with curriculum.
Well, you forgot to mention that you're an author of several books, too, as well. You know, as we're talking here, I'm thinking, what exactly is a curriculum? Could you explain a little bit about that?
Well, we used to just think a curriculum meant all the books that went with the subject. So homeschooling families would spend a lot of money. They'd decide which homeschooling company they wanted to go to, and they would spend a lot of money purchasing the books, and they would say, I have a BECCA curriculum, or I have Home Study International curriculum, or I have God's World curriculum, or I have a piece of Christian Liberty curriculum and a piece of this other type of curriculum. But the word curriculum means the roadmap. It includes whoever's delivering the message, the teacher. It includes all the different things that you do to accomplish the learning goal. So it doesn't have to be a book. It can be going outside and doing an experiment, planting a garden, if that's part of what you want to do.
So basically, it's an outline, a step-by-step outline.
Right. It's a roadmap.
Roadmap for what you want to, where you want to get to. Yes,
right.
I can understand. Well, what are the first steps in designing that curriculum?
Well, I can tell you what curriculum designers do, what I have done. And I think as a homeschooling family, you would modify it and make it meet your specific needs. But the first thing is to decide what do you want the child to accomplish. And we have fancy names for this, like standards and benchmarks. But basically, it's what do you want the child to accomplish. And if you're worried about making sure your child is at grade level, then you can Google, and there's a plethora of benchmarks and standards on the internet, and you can pick the ones that best fit your idea. Some are pretty given. You know, you want your child to learn to read. You want them to learn multiplication tables. You want them to be able to write and talk. So what do you want your child to accomplish? And break it into a small bite. What do you want them to accomplish this year? What do you want them to accomplish this half of the year? And then what do you want them to accomplish in the month? Second, now you can look online, you can talk to people, you can listen to this radio show. What learning experiences do you want to provide for that child so that they will learn what you wanted them to learn? And I like to think of every learning experience basically, you know, why, what, how, and then how am I going to share or expand on this? Now, why should those questions be answered? There are some children that they really want to know why they have to learn it. Why in the world would they have to learn algebra? Why do they have to know 3 plus x equals 6? What does that have to do with anything? Now, there's other children that you just tell them, this is what we're going to learn. And they love to learn it just for the sake of learning. They really get a lot of pleasure out of just the learning. That being said, we know that there is a basic learning cycle, and it's articulated in all kinds of ways. But basically, why are we going to learn what we learn? What are we learning? How are we going to learn it? And then how are we going to share? How are we going to expand upon it? That is probably the biggest chink in the armor of homeschool curriculum. And then a thing that a homeschooling parent shouldn't neglect is, how can I integrate one subject into the other so it becomes a more holistic approach than the traditional school's lockstep method? And fourth, always keep that child in mind.
Well, what do you mean, keeping that child in mind?
Well, we have some basic modalities. I mean, I could go into the multiple intelligences and left and right brain learning and all of that. But basically, if you keep in mind, does your child learn best when hearing something? Does your child learn best when tasting something or feeling something? Does your child learn best when seeing something? So if you keep all of those basic modalities, we call them, in mind, it will help you as you're designing your curriculum. You're going to make sure that everything you do involves as many of the senses as possible. You're going to make sure everything you do involves humor. You're going to make sure that everything you do, humor or joy. You're going to make sure everything that you do involves movement. No longer do we want our children to sit at a desk quietly. We want them to be up and be active in their learning.
What are all of these subjects or disciplines a teaching parent should plan for with their child?
Well, the traditional ones are Bible, math, reading, handwriting, spelling, vocabulary, science, social studies, technology. We've kind of changed reading to call it language arts so that we can include grammar, and we'll lump, you know, handwriting, spelling, and vocabulary together. But all of those things we want our children to be adept at.
Well, I guess it's just about time to take a break here first. So when we come back, we'll dig into all the different, like the Bible and math and so forth.
But we'll be right back.
This is Raising Godly Girls with Patty Garibay of American Heritage Girls.
James 5:16 says, "The prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective." Our daughters need to develop healthy prayer habits to grow into godly women of integrity. One way to instill this discipline is incorporating it into your family's mealtime. A family I know prays alphabet prayers at dinner. A family member asks for a letter of the alphabet. The family member then prays for a person whose name starts with the letter selected. For instance, if Dad receives the letter G, he might pray for Grandma's surgery. The family tracks its prayer request to see how God answers. This is just one tool for showing your girls the importance and power of prayer. Whatever the method, spice up your family's meals with prayer.
To learn more about raising godly girls, visit AmericanHeritageGirls.org.
Welcome back to Homeschool Companion, and we're talking about developing your own curriculum. And I'm here with my favorite producer, Michael Gamblin, and we've just gone through some basic foundations of what you would do or what you would consider as you're developing your own homeschool curriculum. And I recognize that there's different laws for every state. You can register in most states right with your county as a homeschooling parent. In Pennsylvania, you need to have an overseer. In Maryland, a private school can be your overseer. But whatever the case may be, there's usually a certified teacher that's overseeing what you are doing. And in fact, you can even have me be your overseer through Gettysburg Adventist School if you so desire. You can go on the website to learn more about that. And we decide we're going to talk about each subject, but still keep in mind that we're looking at a child, the way the child learns. We're taking them first into consideration, and we're looking at how to integrate it.
Well, I'm going to throw you a curve real quick here. It sounds like I have to have a PhD in this to be able to write and do all this stuff. Is it as difficult as it's sounding?
Well, I'm trying to make it sound very doable because, you know, most curriculum writers have had a lot of experience or training in this, but homeschooling parent can easily do it if they just keep in mind, decide what they want their child to learn, decide and do a little research, find some interesting things so that the child can have that learning experience and connect it to real life experiences. That's such a huge thing. That helps answer the why. I mean, I've had students say, I have no idea why I would need to know this in life. They don't know why they would have to know it, but the adults in their lives are the ones that are helping them.
I found that so many times that in school, I don't need this, but when I got into life and everything, oh boy, I wish I'd have learned it better.
Yeah, we've been working on proportions and ratios, and you know, you could just see these seventh grade boys going, what in the world is this for? This doesn't make sense. You know, I think it started out with animals, how fast they could move, which, you know, should be relatively interesting. If an animal can move this much per inch, how much can they move per second? If they can move this far per second, how much can they move per hour? And of course, you can figure that out in an arithmetic, but I wanted them to do it using algebra. And it was just, blah, you know, it wasn't until I was able to tie it to how that tools and engines and all of that, they're always using ratios.
Well, let's talk about a few of these. Let's start with the first one on the list, Bible.
Well, Bible, even though it should, from all perspective, be one of the easiest curriculums to put together, I find parents really struggle with that because they want to make sure that their child learns the doctrines that they believe in and learns the values that they believe in. But the beautiful thing is that even traditional schools now are choosing the Bible as the textbook. So when you choose the Bible as the textbook, you can totally get your children involved in helping you create the curriculum for your Bible. It can be part of your daily worship time. It can include music, memory verse. What memory verse are you going to learn that week? And Bible study. It can include acting things out and building a box that would be that curriculum for that subject. So let's say you wanted to teach, you start at the very beginning, you're going to teach creation. Then how fun that would be. The kids would build a curriculum box about creation.
Is this where you also bring in activities as well in that curriculum part of it to give them the hands-on? So you always want to do some type of hands-on with your subject that you're doing?
Right. The curriculum box would include all the activities, all the things they needed for the activities. For example, they would have their memory verses. That's kind of a concrete thing, just memorizing those memory verses. But they would also have then all the props they needed to do the skits or to do the stories, and they would build a curriculum box that you would title creation. And not only then would they use the first part of the Bible, but they could look through the whole Bible at anything else that really proved from a biblical point of view that God was the creator. And then they could make a skit about it, and they would have everything collected in that box. And it really helps the older kids to work on developing that curriculum and then presenting it to the younger kids. That's where the sharing comes in. And if you don't have younger kids to share it, go to your local retirement home. They are always so happy when you come. You have to build sharing into your curriculum.
I am a very visual person, so when you're saying curriculum box, I'm actually seeing a box or a basket you've actually put all this in to make, and you put it up on the shelf and then pull it out when you're ready for it. Are you actually talking about a physical box to put it in?
Yes, I'm talking about a physical box, like the size of maybe a paper box that you get the reams of paper in. And you can always go to different organizations and ask, can I have your paper boxes?
Your copy paper comes in.
Yeah, your copy paper. And then you take it home, and that is going to be your curriculum box. Now, I've had parents that start out very simple, and they just have a Bible curriculum box. And they throw everything in there, and then, you know, because sometimes then when you move from one Bible story, you can use the things that you've had in that curriculum box for the next thing that you're going to do. You'll find some activities that really appeal to the children. And now I want to go back to memory, memorizing Bible verses. I can't stress how important that is. Every child should be memorizing a verse every single week. I still do it. I write on an index card and I still memorize a verse because it does something to the brain to have that discipline. But there's so many fun games with memory verses. You can take and put the memory verse all on, you know, a bigger sheet of paper and cut the words out and then have them put the words together to help memorize. You can have them write it.
Make a puzzle out of it.
Yeah, make a puzzle out of it. I like to take the memory verses as we are collecting them and then make them into paper balls, you know, like wad them up. They love the wadding up. But then you throw the paper ball at someone and they'll open it up and they'll say just the text, and then the other person has to say what the verse is, you know, so you create some movement. And then another game that I do with Bible is called memory verse ping pong, where you ping pong word by word back and forth. And don't make, you know, if you have a big long verse, cut it in half. Don't make it so impossible to memorize, but get the really important part out of it, because those promises will hold them through so many trials and tribulations that we have on this earth.
Well, let's go to our next one, math. Now, this isn't one of my favorite subjects, is math.
Yeah, and you know, if you're keeping in mind that you're always integrating, there's a lot of math in the Bible, and there's a lot of Bible in math. I think that one of the things that I tell my students is that God is a designer God, and He has used math in the smallest detail, there's mathematics is involved in his design. And so it's important for us to learn this subject just because it helps us understand in a very minute way God's tremendous design in everything. So as you're going through Bible and as you're going through math, you will see how the integration begins to, you know, if you keep that in mind, you'll see how that can be integrated.
You were talking about memorization, and here's another good thing for memorization is the times tables.
Yes.
And it's so important to memorize those timetables.
And our goal is to have children have them memorized by the time they're done with the third grade. That's a pretty basic thing. We start in the third grade, and my goal is to have them memorized by the end of the third grade. And I do this in all kinds of fun ways. Music, making, and have the kids make up their own, you know, take a familiar tune like, you know, Row, Row, Row Your Boat, and sing the times tables to it and have them write it. I give them times tables tests every day. We start with ones. We start with zeros, ones, twos, like that. And then they'll have one that's all mixed up. And I'll see some of them still take and make eight groups of seven and count them all. And so I try to bring that around to, you know, that's four groups of 14. And, you know, and show them other strategies. But if all else fails, I tell them, I don't mind seeing on the side of your paper, 1 times 7 is 7, 2 times 7 is 14. Write your whole table out. And they do. And just, you know, saying how important it is and giving them all the strategies possible and doing all the fun games with it. Most of them have it memorized by the time they're done with the third grade. And everything hinges upon that.
Well, I think we have time to go to one more. Let's go to reading.
So reading, I think it's important that kids read out loud, not only to you,
but to themselves. Oh, but I hate reading out loud.
That's because when you were little, you didn't read out loud. Even if it's just a few words, the reading out loud really helps a certain part of the brain.
But what if they make fun of me because I mispronounce something or don't know a word?
Well, you know, I'm hoping that is that in a homeschool situation that everyone is very respectful. In a school situation, the same thing needs to happen. We need to have a very safe learning environment. I have two students that are so dyslexic they cannot read. And one is in the fourth grade, but he feels comfortable enough that he wants to try, even though the student beside him is practically saying every single word he needs to say. And even though it takes a long time for him to get through his paragraph, and we try to, you know, as a teacher, I try to select a smaller paragraph, and I'll say, okay, it's time for so-and-so to read. You know, it's his paragraph now. But I know he wants to do it, and that's half the battle, is just making a real safe learning environment. It has to be safe.
I've been told when I was younger, the more you read out loud, the better you will get. Is there truth to that?
Absolutely, because now you're a pretty good reader, aren't you?
Well, I do okay.
Read a lot more out loud. I have students that I'll tell them, go read this to yourself. And when I test them on their comprehension, they haven't understood a thing they read. Then I'll say, go read it out loud to yourself. And it's huge. And then we also have little devices that we've made with PVC piping where the child puts one end on there and their mouth is going into it. And for whatever reason, that focus, it kind of helps them to focus on what they're reading.
Sort of like a phone that you're actually hearing yourself talk.
Yes, yes. Well, we learned a long time ago that there are some children who will always struggle with reading. I could do a whole show just on reading. But we've come to the end of the show. We still have many subjects we could talk about. And I just have one last thing to say, and that is, God bless.
You have been listening to Education Currents, a production of MRG Media Ministries. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.